All right, Bill Barty, we're back on the Carolina Outdoors, and guess what? We're going to talk about a solar eclipse.
What?
Like everybody else in the world right now.
You want to talk about presidential news conferences? That's the other thing.
That was a long silence. Did you understand that? Long silence. Dead air. No, I want to talk about solar eclipses.
Yeah, just like everybody else, we got to get into the mood to talk about what's going to happen Monday. First time in 47 years this sort of thing has happened in the Carolinas, and we're going to learn a little bit about that aspect of it.
You know the difference between a presidential news conference and a solar eclipse?
Oh.
A solar eclipse is totally predictable.
Is it? I guess so. You know what? We're still making fun of me because of I mentioned the corolla of the sun that was going to be visible. And I think it's called the corona of the
sun. Well, let's find out since we don't know.
That's right. Listen, we think we're going to talk to someone who has spent more time in eclipse totality than anyone else that there is. In 1973, as a staff member at Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico, our guest and other researchers tracked an eclipse in a Concorde supersonic airliner across much of Africa at 60,000 feet while taking scientific measurements. He's an adjunct professor at Clemson University's Department of Physics and Astronomy. Our guest, welcome him with us, Dr. Donald Liebenberg. Good morning, Dr. Liebenberg.
And good morning to you.
Now, you've talked a lot and researched a lot and been involved in a whole lot of eclipses, but something that we don't think that you have done is talk to the outdoor guys on WBT about it. Paint us a picture of this, your 27th eclipse, compared to the other 26 that you've had under your belt.
Well, the nice feature of this eclipse is that it will cross with the center line a mile from my house, and thus I will have in my driveway the equipment to make measurements that I frequently have traveled thousands of miles for.
So you're home in Salem, South Carolina. This will be the first time that you don't necessarily have to get in a Concorde or be in Wisconsin or all of the other wonderful places around the world that you've had eclipse time with. This time, you'll be in your driveway.
Right. And it's very convenient because some of the equipment that I like to use is very sensitive and on other occasions has been disrupted by bus travel from the hotel or meeting place to the eclipse site.
So tell me about the equipment. What are you measuring? What are the significant things?
I've been looking at two aspects of the solar corona over the years. Now, the first was to make line profile measurements of an emission line that is hidden in the white light corona that you will see during an eclipse. But you can pull it out for study with a fine sensitive spectrograph that spreads light into various colors and look at the details of this emission line. And by measuring the width of that, we can determine the temperature of the material in the corona. And that turns out to be millions of degrees in temperature. And unusual because temperature generally and heat flows from hot to cold. But in the sun, it flows from the center nuclear furnace to the surface at and reaches a temperature down to mere 5,600 degrees. And then the temperature begins to increase in the chromosphere to 30,000 degrees and in the corona to a million degrees and more. So the question is, how does that happen? It can't be by thermodynamics. And so we are studying what is a mechanism by which this corona is heated.
Now I'm going to go rural on you here and point out that solder does the same thing. It flows to heat, so when you solder copper pipes, the lead in the solder is attracted to heat. So is that something a little bit similar?
Not too much, because the corona is very not very dense, and It is composed of ions, which are atoms that have lost an electron or more. In the case of the iron line that I'm looking at, the iron atom has lost 13 of its 26 electrons, and they form a cloud together with other ions and electrons that's called a plasma. And plasma is really a fourth state of matter. From gases and liquids and solids that you're familiar with, the plasma is this charged set of particles, and they respond to magnetic field lines, and the solar magnetic field lines, therefore, shape much of the corona, the white light corona and the ions in the corona.
Well, a lot of things have changed over the years, and you... I guess started 1954 was your very first total solar eclipse that you participated in related to your work as a solar physics researcher. Technologies have changed. Is this the only time that you're able to study the sun's corona is during a total eclipse?
No, people have made studies with a coronagraph, which is an instrument that is designed to block out the main radiation from the sun. And actually, it's in use these days to find planets around stars in our universe. But for the sun, it allows you to look close and see some of the coronal features. But at an eclipse, you can actually look down to the very limb of the sun. And that offers an exceptionally good opportunity for studying the near and the transition region in the solar corona.
Our guest, Dr. Donald Liebenberg, adjunct professor at Clemson University's Department of Physics and Astronomy, living in Salem, South Carolina, joining the outdoor guys here on the Carolina Outdoors. And Dr. Liebenberg, you've done this as a career, but now you welcome masses of people to look up at the sun or the eclipse. Do you remember it being, I don't want to use the word hysteria, but this big a deal in your other eclipses and the places that you've watched them around the world?
Well, wherever I have been, the people see this beautiful spectacle of the solar corona as a marvelous feature of nature. It happens to be very unlikely because the apparent size of the sun and the apparent size of the moon in the sky are roughly the same, and periodically they intersect and we get the shadow dropping onto the Earth's surface. And that's truly an unusual and fascinating spectacle. And usually the people who are gathered will cheer the event.
Now let's back up into history just a moment, Dr. Lieberman, and tell me when this became predictable.
Well, the Babylonians actually were able to make some predictions of eclipses, and maybe even before that.
So sometime B.C., actually.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And so the calculations have gotten better. Early eclipses, actually, even in the 1940s, were used when they went from one continent to another because the accuracy of the solar eclipse predictions were so good that you could, by timing the occurrence of the eclipse at one spot on the Earth, you could relate it to the distance on to another spot on the Earth. And thus, they measure the distance between continents, which was difficult to determine in an earlier day.
Now, you know, before this became predictable and people started to understand what caused it, this had to be almost a history-changing event, didn't it?
It certainly was, and it also usually produced fear in people. Some of the early reports were that the local people took to throwing rocks or spears at the moon to encourage it to leave and let the sun shine again.
That's probably what I'm going to do.
Kind of hard on the arm there. Yeah, that was the invention of tennis elbow right there.
Well, it turns out that this is a reinforcing type of action because every time it's been successful.
It worked every time. Yes, sir.
Yep. That is too good. Dr. Donald Liebenberg, adjunct professor at Clemson University, talking to us about the upcoming eclipse. If you have not heard about it, I've got a few questions. If you are in the band of totality, as you will, how dark will it get for us?
Well, that depends on what kind of atmosphere we have and whether there are other clouds around. But generally, it will get dark enough so that you will have difficulty reading a newspaper. But on the other hand, if you look at the sky away from the shadow, you will see that the sky is still has a lot of light falling in because you're in the partial phase. So the light actually in the partial phases will cover the whole of the North American continent.
Well, and to speak on that, of course, Don mentioned soldering, and this can be the public service aspect of the Carolina Outdoors. Tell us, how big a deal is it to not look at this eclipse? When we can look at it, when we can't, and the damage it can do to our eyes?
Right. Any time that you look at the sun, and that includes all the partial phases of the eclipse, that you want to use glasses that limit the intensity to about 100,000 of the solar light. And that means that the good welder's glasses, and in particular it means that the good solar eclipse shades, so-called, are really essential. And sunglasses are dangerous, and people who use binoculars should cover the objective lens or the big lens on the binocular in order to see the eclipse.
So cover that with a either a welder's helmet or a solar glass.
Film is used.
And get a bunch of rocks and be prepared to chase that moon away. Dr. Donald Liebenberg, thank you so much for your time and spending it with the outdoor guys here and kind of educating us and our listeners about the upcoming total solar eclipse that's going to occur on Monday.
Well, it's been good to talk to you, and I should remind the viewers that during totality, they should take their eclipse glasses off and look directly at the corona. It's a brilliant and beautiful spectacle.
And they'll have, depending on where they are, a minute or two to do that. And listen, all 26 of your prior eclipses, we're going to link that on our website, too, so you can go see the breakdown of Dr. Liebenberg's other eclipses, too. We're going to take a quick break. This is the Carolina Outdoors here on WBT.